Welcome to the April 27th, 2015 meeting of the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation. We got a few bills up today, nothing too controversial. We'll start out with a public hearing on House Bill 2467A. So we'll open that. And James?
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2467A allows the Department of Consumer and Business Services to adopt rules regulating penalties, fees, and charges imposed on certain withdrawals from individual deferred annuity policies. Becomes operative January 1st, 2016, and applies to contracts entered into or on after operative date. Declares emergency effective upon passage.
All righty. Commissioner Kelly, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Laura Calley. I'm the insurance commissioner with the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and I'm here today also with my colleague, Eric Cutler, who's the manager of our rates and forms section, and so he's going to help me out with some of the technical questions if we get there. So I'm here before you to talk about House Bill 2467, which, as previously mentioned, would grant authority to DCBS to regulate the penalties and fees that some insurers may charge for early withdrawals on individual deferred annuity contracts. And so I want to talk a little bit about what an individual deferred annuity looks like and what the issue is that we're trying to address. An individual deferred annuity is an insurance contract that's typically used in retirement planning for consumers. So consumers may make premium payments, payments over a period of time into the annuity, and the value accumulates, usually on a tax-deferred basis. The insurance company, in return, then agrees to pay out an amount of money to the annuity holder or to the beneficiary later in a series of payments. And most annuities use surrender or withdrawal charges to discourage consumers from withdrawing money from the annuities earlier than that maturity date. The insurance companies typically calculate these surrender charges based on the timing of the last payment into the annuity, and they typically look back within the last 10 years. And there are a couple of different ways that insurance companies might calculate that surrender charge. One is called the first-in, first-out method, and the other is the last-in, first-out method. And I'll explain a little bit about what those mean. The first-in, first-out method is when calculating the surrender charge, it looks back at the original date that the annuity was purchased and the first premium pay was made and said, how long ago did that occur? We're going to look at, was that long enough ago that we don't have to charge you a surrender charge? And that's the method. The last-in, first-out looks instead at what was the most recent payment made into the annuity and looks at whether sufficient time has passed before determining whether there's a surrender charge. So you can understand that the first-in, first-out method is more favorable to a consumer who's been paying in over a period of time. The last-in, first-out method might penalize someone who's had an annuity for a period of time but has made some more recent contributions. So, our concern is that we don't think that the last-in, first-out method is really in the best interest of the consumer. And the reason that we're coming to talk about this a little bit today is, by and large, many insurance companies are using the first-in, first-out method, but we have occasionally seen insurers make filings where they want to use the last-in, first-out method. We, in addition to the policy forms that come through our office, we're also a member of the Interstate Compact, where insurers who write in multiple states can file their policies. And the compact already requires the first-in, first-out method. It doesn't allow the last-in, first-out method. So what we would like to do is, for the insurers that are coming to file directly in Oregon, we'd like to marry that up to match what's happening at the compact level to not allow the last-in, first-out method. And so the bill would give us the rulemaking authority to require that insurers use that method only, and then we would have the ability to enforce that when we are going to approve the policy forms and also when we see people going out to use their annuities in the market. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have about how this would work, and I thank the committee for your time.
So, Commissioner, it appears that carriers have the option of either filing with DCBS or with the Interstate Compact. What's the practice been?
So, Chair Beyer, so yes, carriers do have the option of whether to file with the compact or with us. I'd say, generally speaking, insurance companies that write the same type of product in multiple states will often choose to file through the compact just because they can file at one time and they'll get approval that applies in multiple states. So we do see a lot of these come through the compact, but we do see a number of them come into Oregon. And I think I'll ask Eric to talk a little bit about what characteristics we see in the Oregon-specific filings.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, thank you, Laura. It's probably about 5%. For the record, my name is Eric Cutler. I am the Rates and Forms Manager for the Oregon Insurance Division.
Thank you.
Department of Consumer Business Services. Senator Beyer, about 5% to 7% of the annuity filings in this area come in are filed under a LIFO approach. And many times it's not in par with what's already being done at the Interstate Compact. Lack of a better term, it's a little bit of adverse flow towards consumers that are older, that are maybe less likely to file a complaint. And these surrender charges live longer through the lifespan of the annuity. We're not trying to eliminate the carrier's ability to have these surrender charges because they are fair and they are part of the annuity product. But we're trying to get it to the same standard as the rest of the country. About 70% of the premium volume nationwide is written through the Interstate Compact, and that represents about 44 member states. And so it's a good goal for us to try to get to at least to that level.
Question, Senator?
Yeah, I'm kind of looking at the bill, and I understand the problem. It's just that the way the bill's written, it's pretty broad-based as to your power. You do it by rule. I don't understand why we couldn't put it in statute. And I don't understand why you need such a broad rule to fix such a narrow exception.
Chair Beyer, Senator Girard, so yes, the rule or the bill does provide broader rulemaking authority. So we have had this discussion with industry and also with the ECLI, the trade group for the life insurers. And, you know, our intent at this time is to draft rules that really focus on this last in, first out issue. But one of the things that that a bill like this could allow us to do is just to be able to keep tabs as things evolve in the annuities and in the annuities arena, and to be able to continue have good productive discussions with industry as well as consumers to make sure that we're able to adjust and make good rules as we need to protect consumers. But at this point, our intent, we've been really clear with the stakeholders too, that our rules are going to be focused on the last in, first out method.
We'll follow up. Mm-hmm. Okay, I buy off on that, but the statute, I mean, is forever unless we change it. And so you know, someone 10 years down the road might have a totally different approach or a different feeling about that, and this could work in reverse, or it could work in a multitude of different areas. As long as it deals with, you know, the guidelines, the types of penalties imposed for early withdrawal of the annuity, as long as it's within that scope, then it comes under your purview by rule. And that, I don't know, I'm just one of those people, I just like things tighter. I don't know, I hate to say it, but I don't always trust DCBS. I just haven't. So that's me.
Something new?
No,
I'm shocked and appalled.
I know.
Senator Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just two comments, if I may. One of the reasons that the insurance industry always says that they don't want to be put under UTEP is because they have such good relationship and they have so great oversight from the department that they don't need to be. And this is just one thing that, you know, the insurance companies mostly agreed with, the industry. And if they want to stay regulated by the department, I think this is a good way for that to happen. The second comment is LIFO is only good for elevators.
Okay. Any other comments? Any other questions? None? Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'd like somebody from the industry to come.
Okay, we'll ask and see if there's anybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's all I had signed up. I know there's lots of you there. Roger's getting ready to jump. Okay. Anybody else want to jump up? John, you want to come up and talk? Got a few of you here. Who else has got insurance, too?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer here, represent the National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors. We support this bill. We think it's a good piece of public policy. I think it was a couple sessions back that you chose to put Oregon into the multi-state life insurance compact. And this bill, as we see it, just allows for the continuation of that process where our insurance commissioner can allow for the rules under annuities to conform to the compact. And therefore, we think it's a good consumer protection piece. And also, this is good for not only insurance companies, but good for consumers also, as their products will be universal across the nation in the compact states, which I think there are more than 40 of now, if I remember right. I think it's 42 or somewhere around there. So for that reason, we support the bill. We think it'll be good for our producers and good for consumers both.
Thank you, Roger.
John? Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Powell. I represent State Farm Insurance Company, Liberty Mutual, the standard. And as the commissioner said, they've reached out to all the stakeholders and discussed this piece of legislation, and they're in full support.
Okay. You want to ask a question?
I'm good.
Senator Monroe?
Yeah, what was the vote in the House?
59-0.
I don't have it with me.
59-0.
Okay. Thank you very much.
They're looking it up.
It's 59-0.
Okay.
Yeah, it was unanimous.
Any other questions? None? Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate you coming up. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on this? No more comments? Okay. We'll close the public hearing and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2467A, and the chair would move the bill to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Questions or discussion on the motion? Is there any opposition to the motion? House Bill 2467A moves to the Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. Carrier?
You want me to?
You want to carry it?
I'll carry it, sure.
Senator Riley. We'll close on that. And is Representative Witt here? He is not. See him. All right, so we'll go to the top of the agenda. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2258. James.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2258 clarifies that section of statute allowing insurance to use abstract of non-employment driving record when determining rates applies only to personal insurance policies, applies to insurance policies issued or renewed on or after the effective date. There is no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no amendment.
Thank you. Mr. Powell.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. My name is John Powell, representing State Farm Insurance Companies. Today here in support of House Bill 2258. This is a bill that was brought to State Farm's attention through an agent who had an issue with, or through their rating division, regarding an issue rating a non-incorporated company's auto insurance policy. And they looked at the current statute in Oregon, which provides some limitations that apply to personal auto insurance policies that do not apply to commercial or business policies, but discovered an ambiguity in the law where a corporation is not in, or it's not a corporation, it is an unincorporated sole proprietorship. And since the law used the word individual insurance instead of personal insurance, the unincorporated business came in as an individual and therefore was not able to be rated appropriately as a commercial entity. So the only substantive change in this bill can be found in lines 12 and line 30, both on page 1, where the addition of the words personal insurance are made. Current law just refers to an individual purchasing insurance. This adds the word personal to clarify that ORS 746-260 and ORS 746-265 only apply to personal insurance. And I submitted written testimony, and on page 2 of that testimony, which I believe is on OLIS, should be dated March 5th from the House side, page 2 of the testimony kind of lays out three examples that I think clarify exactly what the bill does. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or concerns.
Questions of Mr. Powell. I think they're reading.
I'm good.
You good?
Mm-hmm.
You good? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2258? Seeing none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll open a work session. Chair moves House Bill 2258 to the Senate floor, but they do pass. Discussion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Seeing none, House Bill 2258 moves to, is that an A? That's just not, just 2258, moves to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Carrier, Senator Monroe wishes to carry. We'll close on that. We'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2259. James.
Mr. Chair.
Committee members, House Bill 2259 modifies the authority of the Department of Transportation to issue variance permits to operate self-loading log trucks, authorizes the department to issue a refund for payment of fuel taxes if a person pays both a fuel tax and a road assessment fee, has a minimal revenue impact and no fiscal impact, and there are no amendments.
Mr. Russell and Mr. Campbell, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bob Russell, Oregon Trucking Associations. This bill has two pieces to it. It is totally non-controversial. The intent of it is to conform state law to long-standing practices at the Department of Transportation. The first part, dealing with self-loading log trucks, you saw during the February 2014 session, and you passed it out, and it passed out of the Senate, actually, and picked up a little baggage and died in the House. So what it does is ODOT used to issue two permits to self-loading log trucks, one to compensate for the additional weight of the crane on the self-loading log truck, and then the second one to allow them to operate over 80,000 pounds when they had the load of logs on. What this bill does is it collapses those two permits into a single permit. So it does exactly the same thing that we've done before, but it just does it with one piece of paper. And the second part deals with heavy haulers that are hauling non-divisible loads over 98,000 pounds. Sometimes they inadvertently purchase diesel and pay the diesel fuel tax. As you know, trucking companies that are subject to the weight mile tax are exempt from the diesel fuel tax. There is a little esoteric piece of the weight mile tax called the road use assessment fee, and that's what the heavy haulers pay. And it wasn't clear in statute that they could get a credit for diesel fuel tax when they paid the road use assessment fee. This makes that clarification. The department has been supportive. I think Amy Sinclair is probably back there going like this. And there have been...
She is now.
Okay. the bill passed unanimously out of the House Transportation Committee and unanimously on the floor of the House.
Yay.
Chair Byer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm here today on behalf of the Associated Oregon Loggers. The association is made up of over 800 companies that are involved in the wide range of forestry activities. Most of them are small and family-owned, and they're the folks that are actually in the woods doing the work. And when it comes to the self-loading log trucks, this simplicity, this collapsing of the permit system is one that's extremely valuable. As you know, these are unique. There's not a lot of these trucks, but they're critically important, especially where they're doing small lot type logging operations, where to move multiple pieces of equipment into place to do this work is not practical. So the self-loading log truck really is a time-saving, it's a fuel-saving, and ultimately a very targeted surgical tool that's used around the state. And so, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we greatly appreciate the work that's been done to help align these permitting processes, and we support the bill. So thank you.
So we got a wood product scalpel bill.
This looks good.
A strange combination of thoughts, but
questions. Senator Riley?
So, Mr. Chair, I've been working for quite a while to streamline permitting, and this is a good step in doing that. I think we've got a lot more to do in streamlining permitting across the state, but this is a good step. Thank you.
Cool. Anything else? I'm seeing none. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Amy, the department's okay with this? Cool. All righty. Anybody else wish to testify on
2259?
Seeing none, we will close the public hearing, open a work session. Chair moves House Bill 2259 to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion on that motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? House Bill 2259 moves to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Senator Riley, did you indicate you wanted to
yes,
carry?
Yes, please.
You did. Senator Riley will carry. We will close on that. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2437A.
Mr. Chair, committee members. House Bill 2437A authorizes the Oregon Business Development Department to enter into agreements for grants and other assistance, including but not limited to direct purchase of goods or services related to entrepreneurial and industrial development. Declares emergency, effective on passage. There's no revenue impact, no fiscal impact, and no amendment.
Mr. Trummer, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ivo Trummer. I'm the Legislative Affairs Manager for the Oregon Business Development Department, or Business Oregon for short. I'm here to speak briefly, I think, on House Bill 2437A. It's a department bill. It's an unglamorous housekeeping category, if you will. It addresses the Industry Competitiveness Fund, a program we've had by that name since 2007 and have utilized funds for that purpose since the late 1990s. We support trade sector industry development with that fund. Generally speaking, we use it to support industries and companies and industry clusters. We use it, for example, to support all our export promotion grant work, support the Western Juniper Alliance and their marketing efforts around around juniper in Oregon, the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership and their work around lean manufacturing, and also the work done by the Oregon Entrepreneurs Network along the I-84 and I-5 corridor to reach out and promote entrepreneurism in more rural Oregon, if you will. In FY14, I'll just talk a little bit about the successes there. We invested about $1.4 million that way through the ICF fund in Oregon Industries and leveraged about $4 million in private and $2.3 million in federal funds. For example, we supported around 100 companies in FY14 with export promotion grants, and these companies reported a total of around $75 million in export sales as a result of our efforts. Currently, statute says that we shall provide assistance. The attorneys tell us we need to specify in statute that we are providing grants and or do this with personal service contracts, which is what we have been doing for the last 10 years. And so House Bill 2437A fixes that in statute. I'm happy to answer any questions.
All righty. This one, I believe, came out of the House 590. Questions, Senators?
What's the emergency?
There's no emergency, but we got to fix the statute so that our rules are in compliance with the statute.
Oh, he actually had a reason.
Yes.
I'm surprised. I thought they had it.
Thought it was going to be the standard. That's the way it came from LC.
That is the way it came from LC. LC actually wrote this language here. So.
Any questions, I should say? That was a question, so it would be any other questions. Seeing none, thank you very much. Does anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2437A? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing and open the work session on House Bill 2437A. The chair moves House Bill 2437A to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation.
2467.
I got the wrong one. No, it's 37.
37, yep.
37.
We're clear on that? 2437A? Yeah. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? Okay, House Bill 2437A moves to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. The chair will take this one. We'll close on that, and now we're down to, we still don't have Representative Witt. So we have 2481?
Correct.
Okay. So we'll open the public hearing on 2481. James.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2481 establishes $50 fee to appeal a Board of Stewards ruling to Oregon Racing Commission, directs commission to refund fee under specified circumstances, allows commission to require appellant to pay costs incurred by state as a result of appeal if appellant withdraws appeal within 21 days of scheduled hearing date, requires administrative law judge to award commission costs and attorney fees if appellant fails without good cause to appear at hearing or if judge finds no objectively reasonable bias for appeal. There is no revenue impact and has a minimal fiscal impact, and there are no amendments.
Okay. Anybody want to testify? I have none signed up.
I'm here to answer any questions. Jack McGrail with the Oregon Racing Commission.
Okay.
I don't feel testimony is necessary, but I will certainly testify if asked.
We don't.
Got one.
Huh? You tell got me, one? I yeah, guess we have
me,
a question.
Tell me the reason for the bill again.
I have him.
Certainly.
I mean, it looks like it.
Chair and Vice Chair. We've had a number of appeals. In fact, over half, 11 of the last 20 appeals have resulted in the appellant not appearing at the hearing. At the cost of the agency, when I have to go through the Department of Justice, get counsel there, I have my investigators there, I have my stewards, just for getting the cost, the labor cost of agency staff, it's about $2,000 to $3,000 per hearing. And this is a de minimis, really, fee that's refundable. All they have to do is show up and they get their $50 filing fee back. So it's really just there as a modest fee to ensure that they're actually going to prosecute the appeal.
Okay.
Senator Riley?
Thank you. So I assume the 21 days is because that gives you time to reschedule your folks who are supposed to testify and be at the hearing?
Senator Riley, the 21 days really, once we get within that 21-day time frame is where the costs start. We start to incur our costs for Department of Justice costs. So if they wanted to withdraw it before that time frame, within 21 days, then it would cost us money. Outside the 21 days, we haven't incurred any costs, so if they wanted to withdraw it, there'd be no costs associated with the agency.
It's kind of a nuisance fee then.
Chair Beyer, I think it's a...
If you're serious enough about the appeal, you pay the $60.
50.
59. Excuse me.
That's correct. And all you have to have is an objectively reasonable basis for the appeal, and you get the $50 back. We're not even charging that.
Okay. Any other questions? Doesn't look like it. Anybody else want to testify? Okay, seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2481, open a work session. Chair moves House Bill 2481 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Senator Monroe, conflict.
Yeah, under an abundance, how does Betsy say this?
Abundance
under an
abundance of caution,
I would declare a potential conflict in that my daughter-in-law is the chief financial officer at Portland Meadows.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Let's see, we have a motion on the floor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there opposition to the motion? There is none. House Bill 2481 is moved to the Senate floor with a do-pass recommendation. Senator
Okay.
Gerard wants to carry it.
Okay.
We'll close on that, and we see the good representative is here, so we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2532A. James.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2532A requires lender or agent or affiliate of lender to provide summary of certain provisions and advertisements and communications intended to induce consumers to apply for or enter into a reverse mortgage contract. Creates exceptions. Applies to reverse mortgage transactions occurring on or after January 1st, 2016. Declares emergency effective upon passage. There is no revenue impact, there is no fiscal impact, and there are no amendments.
Welcome, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Brad Witt, House District 31, Oregon House of Representatives, appearing before you this afternoon in favor of House Bill 2532A, a bill that is intended to address deceptive advertising practices with respect to reverse mortgages. And I want to be very clear here this afternoon that this bill in no way addresses reverse mortgages, the instrument itself, and I'm not appearing here in that regard. To the contrary, this bill and the instrument itself are both very important, particularly in an era when pensions are either disappearing or are inadequate to carry people through their retirement lifespan, there simply isn't enough money. And this is an extremely important instrument to assist people in their ability to take equity out of their homes and use it for whatever purposes that they may choose in their retirement. The instrument is set up for people age 62 and older, and the loan against the home typically becomes due when either the borrower dies, the home is sold, or the home ceases to be the borrower's primary residence. Problems arise, however, when on Sunday morning news shows or afternoon soap operas, deceptive pitches are made to senior citizens, and there must be a high level of audience participation or watching of those particular shows at those particular times, because that's when we typically see these advertising pitches made. Some of the pitches that I am personally aware of, references are made to one, seniors may remain in their homes, or how they may eliminate their monthly mortgages, obtain tax-free cash, and enjoy the lifestyle that you want to live, all very appealing.
And still own their own home.
Senator, it appears that you've heard these before.
Oh, yes.
All the while, you retain complete ownership of your home, and there's no catch because it's all government-insured. What these advertisers fail to mention, or I believe my own editorial try to hide, is that the loan is due in full, again, on those circumstances that I already mentioned, the death of the borrower, the sale of the home, or you cease to occupy the home itself. Mr. Chairman, I believe we actually have some film clips of some of these actual advertisements.
Things sure have changed, haven't they? I mean, with the economy the way it is these days, it's no wonder that thousands of seniors have turned to one reverse mortgage to take control of their retirement. Hi, I'm Henry Winkler, and I'm here to tell homeowners that are 62 and older about a great way to live a better retirement. It's called a reverse mortgage. So here's how it works. When you call the experts at One Reverse Mortgage today, you'll learn the benefits of a government-insured reverse mortgage. It will eliminate your monthly mortgage payments and give you tax-free cash from the equity in your home. And here's the best part. You still own your home. Now call the number on your screen and let One Reverse Mortgage help you live a better retirement. Does that sound too good to be true? Well, listen to what a reverse mortgage did for these people.
The first thing I did was paid off all of our credit cards. Totally.
I can breathe now. My bills are getting paid.
We're traveling more. We're eating out more.
Call One Reverse Mortgage now and get your free DVD and Retirement Your Way booklet, which will tell you more about how a reverse mortgage works and if it can help you. You can receive cash in a lump sum or monthly. It's cash that you can use to pay off your credit card bills, your medical expenses, actually anything. And the best part is, the cash does not affect your Social Security. Take advantage of the equity that you've built in your home with no monthly mortgage payment. One Reverse Mortgage is the largest reverse-only mortgage provider in America. And their mortgage experts are licensed professionals you can trust.
If you're a homeowner 62 or older, call One Reverse Mortgage to get your free DVD and Retirement Your Way booklet. Plus, when you call now, you'll get this magnifier with LED light absolutely free.
Take control of your retirement today.
Oh, there he is, Big Bill Thompson.
Hi, I'm Fred Thompson. And you know, if you're like a lot of folks out there lately, then finances might be a little tight. Well, maybe it doesn't have to be that way. Because if you're 62 years or older and own your own home, then join hundreds of thousands of other Americans who have used a reverse mortgage as a safe, effective financial tool. A government-insured reverse mortgage allows seniors to stay in their own home and to turn their equity into tax-free cash without any monthly mortgage payments. You ought to call my friends at AAG. They could help you or your parents right now. And to find out more is absolutely free.
Call 1-800-848-7173 now to receive your free DVD and brochure with no obligation.
Find out how much cash you may qualify for. Call AAG today.
Call 1-800-848-7173 now to get your free Better Life information pack and DVD. That's 1-800-848-7173.
What you do if you can't AAG, be elected president?
The best advice for a better life.
Work for him.
Hi, I'm Fred Thompson. And you know...
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there's actually... another commercial where Mr. Thompson says, and you always remain in your home. So that may be the case, but it becomes particularly problematic if your spouse is younger, did not qualify for the initial loan because he or she was less than 62 years of age, therefore does not appear on the mortgage, and now that the mortgage is due, and the bank is going to either sell or take or otherwise take possession of that home, the spouse is out having to find another place to live. Precisely at the time, if you've lost a spouse, where it may not be the easiest time of your life to be able to find other housing. Long and short, House Bill 2532 is an attempt to create truth in advertising for reverse mortgages. Reverse mortgages are an extremely important instrument, but we ought to make sure that the folks that are advertising these instruments provide the full story, that in fact at the end of the term of the mortgage you must pay the piper, and you may lose some, a great percentage of, or all of the equity in that home, including the home itself. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll close my statement and be happy to try and answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Monroe and Senator Durant.
Yeah, Brad, isn't truth in advertising an oxymoron?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Monroe, if you watch enough of these commercials, I'm serious. It's just I'm outraged because it's a pitch that is not telling the full story, and I believe is intended to be misleading.
You're absolutely right.
Senator Dredd?
Yeah, it's just kind of an observation. I don't know if you're aware of this, but being the youngest person on this committee, I can understand how my colleagues could be duped, so I'll be okay on the board.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Gerard.
Oh,
ooh,
that's low.
Riley. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm being the oldest member on this committee, I don't watch those particular shows, so I haven't seen these before. But I want to know who's going to be who's the enforcement agency for this. And how will they be able to do it?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Riley, this would be folded into existing statute, and I believe that this would be the specific code here is DCBS, I believe, and I need to.
Finance office.
Okay. All right, thank you.
David, is it Troutman?
No.
Gentleman has spent all the time in front of us.
I frankly would need to check the code, and I didn't do that. So
that's okay. I think the idea is good. I've seen other good ideas about truth in advertising be passed before, and nothing changes, and that concerns me. So I'm a yes on the bill, but I would really like to see us make sure that this gets enforced.
Kind of makes it, it's kind of a little bit of the old saw of you can lead a horse to water.
Yeah.
Well, and again, Mr. Chairman and Senator Riley, my experience with DCBS and their enforcement of insurance regulations, their enforcement particularly of workers' compensation, which I have the most experience with, I would say that they do take enforcement seriously, and I think do it in a fair manner and expect people to adhere to the law. So I would expect no difference here.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Now, what was the vote in the House?
The vote in the House?
59-0.
I think it was unanimous. Yeah, it was unanimous.
59-0.
Okay.
Yeah.
Another one of those.
That's kind of all we've got. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Appreciate it.
That's all I have signed up. Is there anybody else wish to testify? No, Roger's saying no. Evo, you guys don't want to jump in on this one? It's a great topic. All right. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2532A. And Chair moves House Bill 2532A to the Senate floor if they do pass. Discussion on the motion. Is there any opposition to the motion? House Bill 2532A is moved to the Senate floor with a do pass carrier. You think he's young enough to carry it?
No.
Senator Monroe wants
to carry
it.
Hey, I'm the second oldest person on this committee.
I know, I'm still reeling from these comments.
Yeah, I know.
We're closed on that one, and I think we are at the end of the agenda. Is there anything else for the good of the order? We are adjourned. We were